Hi, I'm Mark Nordstrom. I'm Senior Labor and Employment Counsel from General Electric Company and delighted to be here. I'm going to tell you a little bit about GE and how it's approached the guiding principles over the past 4 years or so. Obviously, since the guiding principles only came into effect really in June of this year, I can't really talk about specifically what hurdles or roadblocks we have hit in relation to that because it's still too new. But I will mention a few things about that. In addition, I think I should just start with a discussion about General Electric Company and its structure. I think you probably all know GE generally, but one of the things that is important to consider when we talk about human rights at GE is the enormity of the challenge. So we've got 300,000 employees in 100 companies. We operate businesses ranging from aviation, to water, to energy, to oil and gas, to appliances, to broadcast industry, to finance, to healthcare. So when you think about that many industries in that many countries, you can imagine that almost every human rights issue that a company can encounter, we have encountered in some fashion or another, including things like conflict zones where we're, you know, building power delivery plants in Iraq. So it's not easy to keep pace with what's going on from the potential of human rights, but we do our best. And so that starts the story of about our journey in human rights. And it's very much about a business case writ large and then writ smaller as well. And that is years ago in 2005 when we recognized that given our products and given our growth patterns and our aspirations, we would be working in emerging markets where human rights were under pressure. We decided to try to get ahead of the curve in terms of understanding human rights and how it would affect our businesses. Obviously, there's a number of ways that we could be tarnished by human rights issues in the emerging markets, particularly in the product lines that we offer to emerging markets, like energy, like water, like healthcare. So for that reason, we were asked to kind of get with some people who know what they're talking about in the human rights field, because we clearly didn't have a clue. So in 2006, we began our journey here. Let me just... Okay, 2006, we joined the Business Leaders Initiative on Human Rights. This was made up of largely European companies who had been in this game for... as they say, quite a bit of time. We thought that we could learn very quickly about what human rights meant because we didn't have a clue from these companies. And so we did that. And one of the best things we did in talking with them was understand that, you know, if you do a gap analysis against some of the processes that you already have in place, many of the human rights challenges are probably already taken care of. And we never really looked at it that way before this time, but having done the gap analysis at their instruction, we thought that was a way to go, and it was very instructive because, in fact, many of the things that we had been doing, we were doing in other veins like non-discrimination, environmental, anti-laundering, things like that, but we hadn't kind of equated them as human rights steps. So that gave us support for doing what stakeholders, and that's another point I should mention, stakeholders were key in getting us moving in this direction because they made it clear to us that, you know, you want to get ahead of this issue of human rights and stake out your territory before you get hit with issues. And so we did that, and we developed the Statement of Principles on Human Rights, which I'll show you in a minute. It's a one-page document. And I'll point out certain things about that. And we adopted that in 2007. As I mentioned earlier, in 2008, as a matter of, you know, really some kind of the business case for joining the Global Compact, we in fact joined the Global Compact and have been a member since. And then in 2009, we took the Statement of Principles and created implementing guidelines within the corporation to make sure that the word of human rights and the practices of human rights got down to the bottom. And this was somewhat difficult in the sense of, again, the scope of the organization, but the procedures really are ones that sit atop procedures that otherwise existed. So what we did simply was take the existing procedures and then look at things through a human rights lens, and that's how we implemented the human rights policy. In 2010, you see we joined another organization called the Global Business Initiative on Human Rights. And the difference between this and the first organization was we're taking the discussion of human rights again into the emerging markets so that we can have a better dialogue around the specific human rights issues that we're facing in countries like Egypt. And I just got back from Kuala Lumpur, Brazil, China, India. And so that those discussions are richer, and the makeup of the group is richer too, in the sense that we have corporations outside of Europe and Asia in this organization, which can better inform us in terms of how businesses in those jurisdictions operate. Throughout this all, we've had a very close operating working relationship with Gerald and his team, John Ruggie's team, so that along the way, we feel that we've been keeping pace with the thought processes that ultimately came out of the guiding principles. So when it comes to, you know, how are we reacting to the guiding principles, for us, it wasn't so hard in the sense that as we went through this journey, we were keeping pace with John Ruggie's thinking. And so, for example, we tweaked our statement of principles on human rights to emphasize the issue of respect once we understood that the second pillar was all about respect by corporations for human rights. I also mentioned here a few other things that have happened along the way, such as creating learning tools for our management and teaching those people who would be exposed to human rights issues within our corporation, probably the top 8,000 managers and managers in conflict zones and emerging markets, GE's take on human rights. So I mentioned that we had this statement of principles on human rights. This is it. As I say, it was drafted in 2007, tweaked since then to reflect more the Ruggie principles. But essentially, it notes that corporations are important instruments in the respect for human rights. And then it breaks our human rights focus into four different, you know, quadrants. One, dealing with our own employees, and you can see, you know, tying to the topic we just discovered, just covered, we have adopted the voluntary principles and security as part of our working with our employees and contractors, that philosophy. And in terms of our business capacity, we talk about some products that maybe not human rights, but are certainly human rights enabling. And that would be power, water, and medical care. Water, of course, or access to water being a human right, although Gerard and I perhaps debate that point on occasion. Then with our direct business partners, there's a series of requirements, which includes, for example, supply chain, where we've had 10 years of very rigorous auditing of our supply chains. And this basically sets forth sweeping way, the expectations that we hold all of our suppliers to. And then finally, in the community, serving as a, you know, positive influence, we say at GE, we want to earn money, we want to do it ethically, and we want to make a difference. And so it's making the difference in the community that's discussed here. And particularly, it mentions the idea of applying the Equator Principles. We're not a member of the Equator Principles, but our finance organizations applies the Equator Principles when dealing with large infrastructure programs. So that's kind of where our policy statement has taken us. And I know the question was, you know, is this costly? Is it costly to the corporation to undertake this effort? And I said, I guess it really depends on where you start from. If you have a fairly robust compliance program, environmental program, human rights program, an auditing function, a supply chain, you know, that's pretty much covers the turf, you know, but there are some things that are costly, I think, even aside from that. And just if you look at, the contract minerals legislation, well, we've got the supply chain, but this is like a new thing that we're going to have to add on top of that. So, yes, there are costs involved. If we're going to do human rights risk assessments as a more robust part of our due diligence process, that's going to cost some additional money. We are working with the Institute on Business and Human Rights on contractual relationships and business and human rights. And to look at all of our agreements and modify our agreements and try to negotiate agreements with joint ventures, with suppliers, with customers, all of that is going to require a certain amount of money. But I think there's, you know, there's a lot of payback. And the payback really is that, you know, reputation for a company like GE, we're 130 years old. Think about Joe Paterno, 62 years at Penn State. One day, you know, his whole career is, you know, washed away. Same thing can happen with the General Electric Company, you know. You have one bad incident and things can fall downhill very quickly. I mentioned before, as I say, the notion of the business case for having sales credibility as a result of being a Global Compact member in France. So that's another area where the business case can be made. You know, we had some alien tort claims against us. They were bogus claims. They were ultimately dismissed, but the litigation risks are always there. So that's another business case that can be brought to bear in terms of, you know, selling the idea of human rights and being on top of this. Bennett mentioned socially responsible investors as another group of people who, from a business case, you can use to, again, get yourself in the corner office and say, hey, human rights and keeping up with the Ruggie principles is where we want to be. So I would say that there are costs involved. Those costs can be refuted or can be minimized or balanced by many good aspects around keeping up with human rights, developing a statement, developing the due diligence process, and including the remedies that are called for under the four pillars. Finally, just to make some recommendations, we were asked to make some recommendations, I would say this. I would say build on what you have. You know, don't make anything new. This is, don't make a whole new appendage for your corporation that most of you will have enough that you can build on and just do that. Collaborate with smart people, smart companies who have been around the block on this, because we had clearly not been, but the more you get involved in this, the more you can identify those who know how to get this right. Use stakeholder convenings, because it's the voice of stakeholders that often ring loudest in the corner offices. Get the corner office involved. I mean, this process is led by our general counsel. Depending on your corporation structure and philosophy, it can be led from any number of places. We chose the legal operation, but you know, whatever it is, it's got to be driven from the top down. You know, there has to be part of your culture. And I would say, you know, utilize things like rule of law and the compatibility between human rights and human rule of law concepts that any company working in emerging markets is going to be concerned about. And then the other thing is, I think we're helped somewhat by this trend toward making hard law out of human rights in the form of the California statute and Dodd-Frank. I think we're going to see that more. I think just as you saw Transparency International and some of those trends on bribery and FCPA, you know, take a decade to develop. I think whether we like it or not, those trends of the law hardening in this area, you know, are just going to continue. And so you might as well be ahead of it rather than playing catch up. So are there roadblocks? All of these things are roadblocks. The biggest roadblock is the amorphous way in which human rights are discussed and thought about, and really the lack of cohesion around what this really means to a businessman thinking about, you know, trying to sell product.